I'm now joined with John Dolan, CEO of DFI, Disability Federation of Ireland, to speak about the €40 million funding allocated for community and voluntary organisations. Good afternoon, John, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Johnny. Delighted to be with you and your listeners.
You're most welcome. John, first of all, I have to say that it's all very good news and welcomed. COVID-19 has threatened disability organisations in terms of, you know, additional costs and the loss of fundraising and earned income. Would you like to elaborate just a little bit more on that for us?
Well, the first thing to say is we have to know where we're starting from. Before this crisis, the COVID crisis, we know that there was 40 million of a deficit in the accounts of a whole range of disability organisations last year. And that's a threat to them. That means they didn't have the money that they needed last year and the year before to actually run their service. The budget for the HSE this year provided for a 1%, what they call efficiency adjustment, but that's a cut that was to be taken out of all of our funding and still be expected to do the same amount. So that's 60 million. The 40 million that you've mentioned in your introduction was a 40 million of a handout or a dig out in the context of COVID to help the broad community and voluntary sector. So that gives you a sense of where things are at. I should also say, since the last recession ended at the end of 2013 and we started to climb back, we've gone out of a recession, poverty amongst people with disabilities has increased. It has decreased for the rest of the population, but has increased for the rest and decreased for people with disabilities. The need for services and more people needing services and people needing more extensive services has also increased in that time. So that's the context. We're in a very difficult space coming into this current crisis. Now we can look at we did a survey at the start of the recession, COVID. Nearly 40% of our organisations were concerned that they wouldn't be viable in a 6-month period. That's 4 months from now. 45% laid off or are preparing to lay off staff. So essential services are threatened. According to that, for over 45% of organisations due to the loss of fundraised income. So there's a lot of negative, dangerous trends going on here for us.
How will it be decided, the amount of funding allocated to each organisation?
I think there's a lot of things. First of all, we're more concerned, will there be enough funding to actually have that real discussion about? I think it has to be. It has to be allocated on the basis of needs. There's no other way to do that. We have seen organisations have had to learn, and indeed the HSE itself as a service provider has had to learn how to reallocate when it hasn't got enough funding for the need that's there. And you just triage, you put people on waiting lists, you give people a little bit of what they need instead of actually what they need. Sometimes that can be helpful. Other times it's not of much use. If you don't have the kind of funding that's needed, some people will lose out and some people will wait longer than others. Very hard to change. If funding is going into certain areas and is being delivered in certain ways, it's very hard to shift and change that. So that will be very fraught and difficult.
Yes, I completely understand. John, just on a slightly different note, tell us about DFI, you know, its missions and focus.
Well, the Disability Federation of Ireland started off in its first iteration in 1960. If you think of Ireland at the time, we had just come out of decades and decades of poverty, exclusion, immigration, massive. And then in the 60s, we got television, our lives brightened up a little bit and opened up a little bit. The population started to rise. We were down below 3 million in the late 50s. So things started to open up. Foreign direct investment came in and all the rest of it. So those organisations, the Irish Wheelchair Association, the Central Remedial Clinic, Rehab, what is now Enable, National Council for the Blind, others, they were all, most of them had been recently set up in the past previous 13, 14 years. Remember, in the 40s, we had outbreaks of polio and the TB scourge. So that was the impetus behind a number of those organisations setting up, not all of them. And they were the first set of community or lay organisations in Ireland dealing with disability. Up to then, it would have been the big religious orders, a number of them that had dedicated themselves for 50, 100 years, some of them prior to that, to supporting people with a range of intellectual and other disabilities in institutions always. And so that was the start of it. You came into the 60s and into the 70s, and then you got a big influx, relatively big influx of organisations that would be small in terms of their income and whatever, who were supporting people who had very specific conditions. The Spina Bifida Association set up 68, Friedrich's Ataxia in the 70s, I think, motor neuron, muscular dystrophy, and a whole range of others. So they were organisations that were focused around and set up pretty much always by parents and friends of folk who had these conditions. So that's the way it developed on. We have over 110, 20, 30 organisations now. And they go from a small local access group to something as big in Dublin, we say, and people listening to us will be aware, let's say, the rehab group or St. Michael's House and organisations like that. So it's a massive eclectic mix. Some organisations are totally voluntary, or very, very, maybe have one part-time member of staff or a couple of staff. And then others like St. Michael's House Rehab would have thousands of staff, and would be the huge bulk of the funding would be coming from the state. And that's not to say that, given what I was saying earlier, a lot of that funding is in jeopardy now with deficits and pressure for mounting needs and whatever.
All right. So there are roughly over 600,000 people in Ireland with disability.
Mm, yeah. And that's from... For people just to think back, when you filled out your census form, I think it was the 24th, 25th of April 2016, that'll be coming up this time next year again. So there was a series of questions. There were a series of questions there for people to answer. And for instance, if you just looked at Dublin and the Dublin city, 15% of the population had a disability. That's 81,000 people. And great majority of those, like 30,000 of that 80, are over 65. Under 14 is only 5,000. The kind of conditions, nearly half of that 81,000 are people who have difficulties with basic physical activities. 4,000 difficulties with pain, breathing, chronic illness or conditions. And it goes about 17,000-18,000 mental health. There you go. But that's the way the people of Dublin filled in that form on that night. And it tells you about, for instance, housing. 11% of people with a disability lived in social housing compared to 7% of the general population. In employment, 24% of people with a disability in Dublin were at work. 24. The average for the general population was 54. So you just see some of the real chronic problems and issues that are there for people.
And I don't think the public generally realise these numbers.
No, we don't.
And would it be true to say that roughly 56,000 people could be diagnosed with a disability this year alone?
Oh, it'll be... That statistic was fairly modest. It would be an understatement. We're reckoning now 13.5% of the population we have reported as disabled from 2016. That'll be gone up to 750,000, three quarters of a million, or thereabouts, give or take, when the next one is done this time next year. You have to allow for the fact that our population is going up as well. And when I said a few minutes ago that nearly 30,000 of the 81,000 are over 65, that's the big drive. That's one of the big drivers of the increase. As we get older, we pick up these different conditions to a great extent. Like if there's only 5,000 under the age of 14, and from 65 up, there's 30,000. So that tells you that. The other thing is our health services and our diagnostic services and people's information is much better now than it would have been. So people have an expectation, and they're getting things checked out, and things can be checked out, and they're finding out that they have different conditions. That wouldn't have been the case before. A lot of things in the past were just putting down, Asher, what age are you now? Asher, look, you can't expect to be. The person had less ability, physical or cognitive or whatever it was, but it was never logged as something, we call it a disability. It was just, you're getting old. So that has changed. So that's where the increasing numbers will come. An interesting thing, Dublin City has fought 15%. Your neighbours in Fingal, I think, had about 10%. What's the difference? Fingal has seen the expansion and the growth of new towns and centres, young families, family formation coming into it. So you don't pick up, you don't have the same extent of the older population isn't as big a percentage. So you'll see those differences in it. The profile of the population will decide it. But it's one in seven. Now but I don't see every seventh or eighth person I see isn't in a wheelchair or has a white cane or something. No. So much of it isn't visible until you get in close to somebody and you might have a sense, but they're not in a wheelchair or on crutches or whatever. The great majority of people are not. The other thing about this is that if you're disabled, you're not out and about as often. You're not going to work. You've had lots of problems getting education and training. The environment isn't encouraging you and you have no money. So where are you going? So where are you going to be seen out? So all these different things feed into each other.
Yes, of course. Yes. Thanks for that, John. In general terms, how has the outbreak of COVID-19 affected people with a disability?
It certainly has brought anxiety and fear to people in a way that wouldn't have been there before. Lots of those. For instance, the second biggest group I mentioned there, difficulty with pain, breathing or other chronic illnesses. Now, breathing is the one that sticks out when it comes to COVID. But lots of people with disabilities and various conditions are more so than others are more vulnerable to the virus, or put it another way. If they get the virus, they have a longer road to go to recovery for a range of reasons. So people are justifiably bothered about that. People who need physical help and assistance, like them coming to assist them, getting up and do stuff in the house on a regular basis, on a daily basis. Many people are really, really afraid to be bringing someone into the house who has just been in someone else's house and who was in someone else's house before that. And one of the things that has happened, because of the general close down, there are, in some cases, there are family members at home now that wouldn't have been before. And they're picking up the slack and where that's possible, they're, if you like, happily doing it because they can't go out to their, some of them have been laid off work or whatever. And then, excuse me, some people are of an age that mightn't have been going to work or mightn't have had been employed, but they're picking up on stuff on a contingency or on a kind of an emergency basis. But that thing about contacting the virus is a big thing. The other interesting thing is we talk about social distancing and cocooning and all the rest of it. Well, if you're not working and if you can't get out and about and if your general health isn't great, you're pretty much cocooned isn't the name, but you're not out and about anyway. So some people are saying, you know what, a lot of people are upset about social distancing and cocooning and all the rest of it. We're doing that all the time. So, you know, and the whole impetus of policy for people with disabilities now is for them, this is government policy as well, for them to be able to participate, be out and about. And if you just in your mind's eye, if you can think of a family with two or three kids in it, and one of them has a serious disability, a significant disability, could have to do with, it could be a physical thing, could be intellectual disability, might be their vision or whatever. But at the ages of 15, 16, 17, now thankfully they will have been going to school and 90%+ of them, more than that, will be going to the regular school their brothers and sisters are going to. But at the age of 18, the roads divide very strongly and very sharply. If you were visiting that house, you might be shy to ask one of those kids what are they going to do after the leaving cert, on the basis that you have a fairly good idea they're not going anywhere. Whereas the other one, you'll be asking them, well, what are you planning to do? Well, I'm thinking of doing this, or I want to do that. It's an apprenticeship, or I want to go to college or something. The one with the disability very quickly comes into the spotlight then. Where is their future? Where is their potential future? We can say that, is it something like 90% of kids who do the Leaving Cert go on to something post-Leaving Cert? You can't say that about the ones that have a disability. So no. Getting off the blocks, if a man or woman in their 30s or 40s or 50s becomes disabled, they, even though they have a lifetime of all the extra skills that go with being in the workplace, the soft skills, the connections, you know, being able to meet deadlines and blah, 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 get out of all the rest of it, they find it pretty much impossible to get back into work. So that's the kind of situation we had before we came into COVID.
Well, I have to say, you're all doing great work for those with disabilities, and keep it up, and the very best of luck with everything. We're going to have to leave it at that now, John, and thanks very much again for joining us today.
Thank you, Johnny. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Most welcome, all the very best, and take care. Now, that was John Dolan, CEO of DFI, Disability Federation of Ireland, talking about €40 million funding allocated for the community and voluntary organisations.